Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello there, friends. Welcome, welcome. I'm so glad you are here at the beginning of another week. Can you believe we are at the 15th week of this year? I don't know about you, but it is going fast for me. I feel like time is just moving by. I can't believe we're already past Easter and we're already well into spring and on our way to summer. And my friends, if you know me well, you know what that means. Yes, that means we're coming closer to Christmas. Did I just talk about Christmas in April? Yes, I did. Am I sorry about it? Not even one little bit. I cannot wait for Christmas, but we will stay in the spring. Don't worry. All of those of you who don't talk about that till after Thanksgiving, deep breaths. It will be okay. But we are talking about 52 habits for healthy parenting. And this week we're going to be talking about giving generously. Now we know that it is more blessed to give than it is to receive. And this week we will be having Share-a-thon. So make sure you listen in to hear testimonies of God's goodness and how he has worked through American Family Radio. And we'll be having a really good time. We are going to have a co-host in Wesley Wildman this week. And I'm really excited about that. So be sure to listen on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, where we will be talking about giving and how that can be such a blessing. But today we have a fun show for you. We have a self-professed big personality. We have Dr. Eddie Simmons. Now, he is a retired board-certified chaplain, and he has his Doctor of Ministry from New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary. He has a Master of Divinity from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary and a Bachelor's in English Education from Northwestern State University in Louisiana. I'm going to try to say that. Is it how do you say that, Eddie?
It's Natchitoches.
It's like
N-A-K-A-T-O-S-H. Natchitoches.
I don't even think I can say that. Okay, he's from where he just said he is in Louisiana. See, there are places in Texas like this where if you're not from here, you know, you can't pronounce it, but he is from Louisiana, y'all. He served as a pastor of Baptist churches for 33 years and staff chaplain level 2 for Memorial Hermann Health System for 15 years. And he's currently serving as a PRN chaplain, which PRN means as needed. He goes when they call him. And he's been married, get this, for 54 years. He's got 3 kids and 5 grandkids. Eddie, welcome today. We're so glad to have you as a guest.
Well, I'm excited to be here. I'd just love to talk about my work and about things related to that, and I'm just honored to have the opportunity to share today.
Well, we are honored to hear about that as well. Let's just start with your Christian testimony. Just tell us your story, Eddie. How did you come to know Jesus, and how did you become a minister?
Well, I can share that I started going to church 9 months before I was born. I was raised by a family that we were in church every Sunday. I actually was raised on a red dirt road in North Louisiana and attended a very small country church that was also on a red dirt road. And over the years, I began to hear about Jesus and learned about Jesus. But I especially remember on a Sunday morning, we had a revival preacher, and he preached a very powerful message. And listening to him, I knew and was convicted that I had sinned and that I needed a Savior. And as best I could, as an 11-year-old boy, I trusted Jesus and started a relationship that continues today through I'm almost 77.
Oh my goodness. And how did you be called into ministry? And I do want to say, Eddie, it always makes my heart glad to hear testimonies of God's faithfulness. And there are certainly testimonies of transformation, you know, that God takes people in miraculous directions where they are, you know, in a lot of trouble, they experience a lot of trauma, and God saves them. But there are also equally powerful testimonies of people who know Jesus and follow Jesus all of their life. So if you're one of those people who think, oh, I don't have a testimony. Yes, you do. Your testimony is God's faithfulness. So how did you get called into the ministry, Eddie?
It really happened during my junior year in high school. Again, I was always in church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. But I began to sense that God was trying to convict me of something. The last thing I ever wanted to do was be a Baptist preacher. And I was very hesitant about even thinking about that subject. But I began to sense God's calling. And I remember during a prayer meeting on a Wednesday night that I became convicted that God was calling me to something. And I had talked to my pastor, and I raised my hand and asked him if I could share something with a group. And I said, I don't know how it's going to work out, but I feel that God is calling me into some ministry, and I want to say yes to God that I'm going to do what he's calling me to do.
That's beautiful. And then how did you become tell us about your career as a pastor? And, you know, I think, you know, you started obviously as a pastor, can I say this, a long time ago, right? You've been
yes.
a pastor for a long time, and you've seen a lot of ways that the church has changed. So talk about that, and how did you experience that as a pastor? How did that go?
Again, I wasn't sure what I was committing myself to, but in college, I began to have opportunities to preach. And I've always been a person, if you ask me to do something, I will do my best to do it. I was raised that way. And so I began to do a lot of preaching. During my junior year, I actually was a sort of a pastor of a little church outside of Natchitoches, Louisiana.
Natchitoches,
Louisiana.
Did I say it right?
Yes, you did.
Okay, Natchitoches. Okay.
And I always knew that seminary was important. I was raised to believe in education. And so I went on to seminary and did my theological training in Fort Worth. And at the end of that time, God opened the door for me to become pastor of a church. And so I said yes. And so I spent 33 years of my life serving as a pastor. Started out at a little country church. And then my last church was a 1,200-member congregation in Lake Charles.
Wow. Well, then how did that lead to your role from going from pastor to chaplain? And, you know, Eddie, I feel really strongly about this, about the role of chaplaincy, because for me as a nurse, I often meet the best people on their worst day. And you just see things that happen that are really tragic and terrible. And I think it does a disservice to think, okay, somehow the hospital is separate. Like, we don't have any connection to your faith, because it's in those moments that people are seeking faith, even when they may not ordinarily seek faith. You know, I see people praying who say they haven't prayed in years, because when you come to the hospital, that's usually a place that nobody wants to come. And so how did you get involved as a hospital chaplain?
Well, it's very simple. I pastored for 33 years, but in my 32nd year, I was pastor of a very large church and a lot of responsibility with being a senior pastor. And I found that I was spending a lot more time taking care of the business of the church mm-hmm. and dealing with various and sundry issues related to the church. And my heart has always been ministry. And it really was a God moment for me. In the fall of 2005, I came out to Houston. I was in Lake Charles, and I had a meal with a longtime friend of mine who had become a chaplain, and I had a dinner with him. And in the course of visiting with him, I told him of my frustrations and my unhappiness with my current status, and said, I don't know if I can continue to retirement as a senior pastor. And he said, you ought to think about leaving the pastorate and transitioning to hospital chaplaincy. He said he'd known me. He said, you've always loved hospital ministry, and your reputation in churches were that you were a good pastor for hospital ministry. I had never even thought about becoming a chaplain, but I left there that night wondering if that was a God moment, and it turned out that it was. I went home. I'm going to share a little story about my wife that I won't say much more about. But I went home from that encounter, and I asked my wife, I said, what would you think if I were to leave the pastorate and transition to hospital chaplaincy. And I was kind of surprised. She said, well, can you start tomorrow?
Oh, wow.
I think we were both at a time. Yeah. We had had a great experience, but and there was a lot to that transition. Mm-hmm. But that moment of him suggesting that I pursue that, and I've always believed that trying to open doors, and God will open the ones that he has for you to open, and he'll close ones that he's closed quite a few doors in my life. And so he just opened the door for me to make the transition to what's been the last 17 years of my life.
17 years. And, you know, it reminds me of a very well-known and often used verse, but from Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your path. And I think something we can learn from your story, Eddie, is that, I say this a lot, I think sometimes, you know, we want to know what the end of the story is, or we want to know where we're going or what we're doing. But when God told Abraham, get up, go to the land I will show you. It sounds like you had the same experience. It's not like God called you when you were in 11th grade and said, okay, you're going to serve as a pastor for this many years, and then I'm going to call you as a chaplain. You'll start that and do that for the last 17 years of your career or whatever. You know, you just follow God faithfully in the everyday. And then he shows you where to go and he directs your path. And you said you've been doing this for 17 years now, so you have a lot of experience. What is the role of a hospital chaplain? What does that look like? What are you doing every day, boots on the ground in that hospital?
Well, it's really a fascinating calling. I really did not know too much about it, but I came to learn very quickly during CPE, which is necessary for a hospital chaplain, that a chaplain's primary role is to encounter people and listen to them and try to discern what their needs and their wants and the desires are, and then to provide appropriate emotional and spiritual support. It's to walk alongside of people, oftentimes to walk into the nightmares of life and to meet them where they are and to listen to what is happening in their lives and then to help them to begin to find a way to move forward.
So, you know, it's funny. You wouldn't think that nurses and pastors have a lot in common, but we do in a way, Eddie, because we both experience a lot of trauma. We listen a lot. Nurses listen just like chaplains do, just like pastors do. And there's a lot of burnout and a lot of, you know, very difficulty in caring. I call this a trove of trauma, you know, that I carry around. And I know, Eddie, that you, just like me, you have a trove of stories that no one will ever know but you and God, because you can't share them because of HIPAA violations, or sometimes you just don't want to share them. Because I think about, like, my husband, he is very tenderhearted. And if I told him every tough situation that I dealt with, I don't think he would sleep again. You know, he's just not built to have things like that. And it's not lost on me that I think that we see a lot of pastors burning out just with all of that, and a lot of nurses burning out. And so one of the things I talk to nurses about is there's different things that you can do. You can still be a nurse, but maybe change position. And I've just kind of had an aha moment that you did the same thing as a pastor. Like, I still want to serve the Lord, but let me serve in this different capacity. And I really want to get into, we're coming up against a break here, but when we come back, I want to talk about how do you become a chaplain? So if there's people out there listening who think, you know, I'm in the ministry, but this might be something different, you know, this might be a different way to serve. How do we do that? I also want to talk to you about what chaplains do, more about what they do, and how, if someone is in a hospital situation, calling on a chaplain could be a really beneficial thing to do. A lot of times when people go to the hospital, they don't know what to do. Well, they can say, hey, can I connect you to the chaplaincy service? So we'll talk about that when we come back, and we'll talk about giving generously. Eddie's given his time generously in the hospitals, and there's so many ways to give. Stick with us. We'll be right back. Last year, because of you, Preborn's network of clinics saw over 58,000 babies saved. Thank you to all who made this possible. Let's celebrate these precious babies. Daisy and her husband had decided they never wanted kids. And when she found out she was pregnant, she immediately thought abortion. But after she and her husband met her baby on ultrasound and heard the heartbeat, their hearts melted and they chose life. Her baby Jeffrey is healthy and beautiful, and Daisy and her husband can't even imagine life without him. Each of these babies are truly miraculous, and every day, Preborn celebrates 200 miracles. $28 a month can be the difference between the life and death of a child. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection that doubles a baby's chance at life. Let's join together and help mothers choose life. Just dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 baby, or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hello there, friends, and welcome back to my conversation with Eddie Simmons. He is a pastor and a chaplain. And listen, I have been learning some really important things. So if you missed the first segment, the most important thing that you need to know is how to say Natchitoches.
You
did
got
I say it.
It?
Okay, listen, I have to tell you, this is spelled N-A-T-C-H-I-T-O-C-H-E-S. Natchitoches. Okay. All right. I just want to make sure. I just feel personally accomplished, Eddie, that I am learning how to say this, the names of towns in Louisiana. And everybody from Natchitoches is just laughing at me right now. And that's okay. We're all friends. But Eddie, we've been talking about your journey as chaplain. And I want to talk to you about, how do you become a chaplain? So what would that, you talked about some training earlier, and you talked about even different levels of chaplain. You're a level 2 chaplain. Break all that down for us and give somebody a primer to think they're thinking, maybe I want to do this. What would that look like?
Well, chaplains come in all shapes and sizes and flavors. Many people can get into chaplains without the type of what it requires to become what a professional chaplain is. I'm actually part of a group called Pastoral and Chaplaincy Services, and we provide training for people who do chaplaincy on a more of a layman's type basis. But to be a hospital chaplain really is quite a lengthy process. I mentioned to you my initiation in my conversation. I had to go from there and do a year's residency in something called CPE, or Clinical Pastoral Education. That is where you go, and it's a really full-time situation. You spend about 10 hours a week in class, and then you spend 30 hours a week making hospital visits as a student chaplain under the supervision of a CPE supervisor. And so that for most of the hospitals that would be a good places to work, you need 4 units of CPE. You can do that in a part-time basis, but you only can do 1 unit a year. It's better to do it in a residency. I did my residency at the VA Medical Center in Pineville, Louisiana. And the great thing about that was every patient that I saw was a veteran, and that was such an honor for me. And then beyond that residency, you have to have a college degree, which I got in Natchitoches, Louisiana, and then a seminary degree, and I actually have 2. I have a master's from Southwestern and a doctorate from New Orleans. And then you have to be endorsed by a recognized religious entity. All entities out there, or religious entities, have some mechanism. In my case, having been a Baptist all of my life, I am endorsed by the Baptist General Convention of Texas, or Texas Baptist, as they're also called, and that's a requirement. Once you get through all of that, and you at that point you are hireable, you have 2 years then to achieve the status of board certification. board certification, you have to have about 2 years of hospital visits. And then it's a very complicated application process. You have 27 questions that takes about 2 weeks of days to answer the questions. Then you meet with a board, and if you pass, you are then certified as a board certified chaplain.
Well, that is a lot of steps, Eddie. And so I want to talk about two perspectives here, one from the chaplain's perspective and one from the patients they serve. But you know, you just described a lot of work. It's not like you decided, oh, I'm not going to be a pastor, I'm going to be a chaplain. And the next day you show up at the hospital with your Bible and say, I'm here, guys. Where can you use me? So is it worth it? Is it worth all that work?
It really is. A lot of people ask me when they found out that I was going to do a residency. They said, well, Pastor, you've been visiting in the hospital all of your life, but a chaplain is a bit different than a pastor. There are some similarities, but there are some differences. And I think one of the things about clinical pastoral education is a lot of time is spent to teach you how to listen to people so that you can hear what they're saying and that you can provide the appropriate emotional and spiritual supports.
Well, and then looking at it from the patient's perspective, when you call chaplain services, this is somebody who is highly qualified and highly experienced. And so how do they access that? Because I'm imagining, Eddie, you know, you're in the emergency room, you're in the intensive care, death is imminent. It's probably going to be more likely for someone to think, we want a chaplain, we want some spiritual services. But that is not necessary. You know, you don't have to be in a critical position, although, you know, a lot of times the need for spiritual support is there. But what advice would you give to families who are in a hospital situation about accessing chaplaincy services, and what can they expect?
That's a great question. My experience has been limited to Memorial Hermann because I've worked there for the past 17 years. But one thing, when patients are admitted to the hospital, they have an interview with a nurse who does an intake. And in our system, one of the questions is regarding your interest or need for spiritual support. And they ask you, would you like a chaplain to visit? If the patient says yes, then an electronic request is triggered and it goes to chaplaincy services. I'm actually going to be working this afternoon and I will be given a list when I arrive of all people who've asked for a visit by a chaplain, and I will spend most of my afternoon visiting those. However, a lot of times visits can also be triggered by nurses or by physical therapists or by respiratory therapists. I've worked at the same hospital for now 16 years and have developed a lot of relationships. And a lot of my visits come from people who are staff members who say, I was just in a room and that person seems to be having a crisis. Would you go and see them? Mm-hmm. And so that is the second way. Another way, of course, when there is in our hospital a code blue, that means mm-hmm. that it's a medical emergency. We are responsible and we report to those. I was working earlier this week, and just as I was about to go, there was a code blue, and I went and responded to that and gave support to the family while the medical team was taking care of the patient. Also, in every hospital room in the hospitals where I serve, there is a board of important numbers, and chaplaincy's number is there. The patient can call, and I quite often will get a call from a patient asking, could you come and see me? So there's a lot of different ways of accessing a chaplain. And I respond when someone asks me. I feel like that's probably a God moment. So I don't put them on a back burner, but when I'm asked, I try to go at that point if I can.
I think that's really important to know that it's easy to access a chaplain, really. You can ask the nurse. A lot of times, just like you said, in hospitals I work at, that number is right there on the board. So don't be hesitant. And I think sometimes I would encourage families to reach out early because you think, well, no, this situation isn't that serious. But I'd say If you're in a hospital, that is not a good position to be in, and you'd be surprised at how much comfort and ministry you can bring to somebody just by having a chaplain, just somebody there to pray with you and to listen to you and to be able to talk, because the care team has different priorities, right? When they come in, you know, I've got to get your medicine, I've got to do your assessment, but the chaplain, your priority is just to be there and listen and care. And I think that's important. You also brought up another important element of this, Eddie, is that you don't always minister to just the patient. You are ministering to the family. So maybe there's somebody in the waiting room who's waiting for news, and that can be scary. How do you minister in those kinds of situations where you're ministering to people who are visiting?
Well, when I made the transition, I had a number of people ask me after a year or two if I missed being a pastor, and I said, I don't miss it at all because I'm pastor of a hospital.
No.
And so much of my ministry has been to families. I tend to be a people person, and oftentimes I sense, as I did yesterday with the Code Blue, I was not in the room, but two family members were sitting in the hallway, obviously family members. And so I approached them, and I was able to talk with them and then to pray with them for the well-being of the patient and stay with them until the patient was stabilized and the doctor came and gave them an encouraging report.
Well, and another group that I really want to talk about is the employees. So a lot of times when we think about chaplains, we just think about patients, people who are in a hospital bed. But you have a different kind of patient, I think, Eddie, because we've got nurses and physicians and all kinds of ancillary support services. So many people who work in a hospital. And especially since COVID, we're seeing levels of burnout, levels of moral distress, levels of people wanting to leave the healthcare profession because it's really hard. They're just, the hours are long, the demands are high, the pay is low. And I know anybody who's working in a healthcare setting is out there going, yes, exactly this. It costs a lot for our families. We experience things that we can't share with other people, and it is really hard. So how do you minister to employees of that health system?
It's really interesting, and I would say that probably 25 to 30% of my ministry is to employees.
That much, really?
Yes, and again, of course, I stayed at the same hospital for 15 years, and I walked the halls of that hospital constantly and have developed relationships. And many, many times I will have an employee stop me, a nurse or a PCA, or I've even had a doctor stop me, and they were going through a difficult moment, and they asked me, Chaplain, would you pray or would you listen to me? And when those happen, I'm a person, if you ask me to pray for you, I will, but I do it right then.
Love it.
And I've taken many employees off to the side of the hallway or to a private area and then prayed with them right there. I've also, over the course of 15 years, done marriages for staff members.
Oh,
I
love
have
that.
Done funerals for family members of staff members. I recently did a funeral for one of my good friends whose husband died very unexpectedly. And so we chaplains, and again, Memorial Hermann is very much, it encourages us to be very supportive of our staff, and we do that and have a great relationship with all of our staff.
Well, you know, Eddie, the show is called Dr. Nurse Mama because I use my professor brain and my hands-on nursing experience and my heart as a mom to be a guide on the side for parents. And what I know is that there are a lot of parents who work in healthcare. There are a lot of parents who are nurses, who are nurses aides, who are, radiology technicians, and who are even support people and secretaries in hospital settings. And it's a really tough place to get mental health services. We, especially for nurses, I'll say we often treat ourselves as our own worst patients. I'm going around making sure everybody is hydrated, they have good nutrition, that their stress level is low, that the environment is just right. While my environment's terrible and, you know, stressful, and I'm dehydrated and I'm malnourished and I'm stressed, but trying to get access to say, and even sometimes just to say, okay, I want to see a counselor or something like that, that can be really hard. But I want to encourage people listening that this may be a resource for you that you haven't thought about. Because I think, Eddie, it can be easier somehow to call a chaplain to pray for you and to say, hey, I'm struggling and I need help. And sometimes that little bit of support is all that we need. But sometimes it could be a greater signal to say, okay, you know, this is the first time I've really acknowledged this is going on and maybe I'll be open to help. So I want you to talk, Eddie, to that person that works in a healthcare system that is stressed, that is struggling with something, and they're just carrying it alone. What would you say to them to encourage them to say, to talk to a chaplain about it?
Well, chaplains, again, are, we're pastors or ministers, however you might want to describe us, but we are there to listen and to love and to walk alongside them. I have walked alongside so many staff people at Memorial Hermann Southeast, which is where I have been these past 16 plus years. And I cannot begin to, tell you how many staff members that I have walked with them through divorce, through the loss of a child, through the loss of a spouse, through hearing that they had some devastating diagnosis. And that is, again, chaplains do that on a daily basis, and that we're just there to be called upon. Chaplains have to really be asked. We just can't see somebody and invade their presence. Although I will oftentimes, if I see someone being tearful, I'll just kind of come up alongside of them and ask them if they're okay. Chaplains are a wonderful resource, and we are there for the staff every bit as much as for the patient and the family.
Well, you know, I think of this one time when I had a nurse colleague who was just going through a really hard time, had experienced a lot of just sickness and troubling circumstances. And she came to me one day and she was teary. And I said, what happened? And she said, I was just sitting on a bench outside the hospital and the chaplain came up and noticed that I was sad and he prayed with me. And she said it was really short and he just prayed with me and he left. And she said, but it has just, he will never know the impact that that had on me. And so I encourage you, whether you're a chaplain or not, sometimes you don't know what happens there when you just are bold and ask someone if you can pray for them right then and there. But it stuck with me that I saw the other side of that, how that prayer had really impacted her, because sometimes they don't say that. Well, when we come back, I'm going to ask you, Eddie, about some of your stories at your time at the hospital and what we can learn from those. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Little things can make a difference. A little note, a little smile, the small stone that David hurled at Goliath, and precious little babies. When you sponsor an ultrasound at preborn, your gift, no matter how small, makes a difference in a big way. Who will this little baby become? What giants will this baby slay? How about the mother who was spared from unspeakable sorrow because of you? You never know the difference you're going to make with a donation of just $28 to introduce a mother to her child through ultrasound, which doubles a baby's chance at life. All you have to do is take a few small minutes to make a life-saving donation. Preborn will take it from there as their network of clinics rescues 200 tiny babies every day and shares God's love with mothers. Get involved today by dialing #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at afr.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey there, friends. Welcome back. We are talking to Eddie Simmons. He is a pastor and now a chaplain. And we've been talking all things chaplaincy and how that really impacts our health. So for me as a nurse, I believe that spiritual health is really, really important. We've got our physical health, of course, but we've got so many different planes of health. We have emotional health and mental health. And our spiritual health is important. And I think we often see a crisis of spiritual health with our crisis of physical health. And, you know, Eddie, I see this a lot, you know, for me working in pediatrics, it's a different kind of burden. Because when you see an older person near the end of their life, it's a very different kind of experience than when you see a child who is experiencing a health crisis or an incurable disease, or they're nearing the end of their life. Because we think with older people, like, okay, they've lived their life and, you know, we can have some joy in that. But with kids, it's just, it's always a different kind of emotional distress. And, you know, I have met, like I said, a lot of really best people on their very worst day when their child is there. So I want you to talk about children in the hospital and how you minister to those families and your interaction with child life specialists, because I know you have worked closely with them to provide care to families who are experiencing, especially children who are hospitalized.
I've been very blessed in the years that I have been at my hospital. We have a child life specialist who is just incredible. Her name is Julie McCarthy. And what we do so often is we partner. We often are called to crises in the emergency room. And these are just the absolute nightmares of life. And many times there are families who there is a child who has died or has been involved in some automobile accident or something, and they arrive with other children. And the moment that I discovered that, I always called our child life specialist. And she and I partnered together. She is incredible with children, which is not my specialty. And I tend to, and I don't tend to, but I'm able to provide the support to the adults. And together, we really have had so many incredible experiences in which we've worked together as a team to take care of all the people involved.
I appreciate you saying that, because I think in today's world where healthcare to some extent can be a touchy subject, you know, we have there's a growing mistrust thinking, okay, well, what is really your agenda? Are you going to come alongside me? And there's just this kind of uneasiness, especially when you're encountering a healthcare provider you don't know. But it's really encouraging to hear you talk about this, Eddie, and people like you, and frankly, people like me who are in the healthcare system, and we're looking at people coming in thinking, how can we serve you? How can we come alongside you and be there for you? And just like you described, you know, you have a child that's hurt, but other children come, siblings, friends, cousins, whatever that is. And we're thinking, oh, we want to make sure that we are providing you support as well, which I think is just really important. And it's very sobering for me in a way, Eddie, to think about, because when these children come in and witness this, how that experience goes is really going to direct their resilience and their healing. And if it's a traumatic experience, if there's a lot of chaos, if there's conflict, then that can impact how the child sees that experience. But someone like a chaplain or a nurse or someone else coming along, we can really provide comfort in that moment. And I know as a nurse practitioner that the number one predictor of kids developing resilience and trauma is meaningful connection to a trusted adult. So if you're able to provide spiritual support to an adult in that moment so that they are strengthened to provide support to their child, y'all, this is really important stuff. I mean, this we're talking about issues of health crisis and life and death. And so I encourage you to think about those kinds of things. And even if you are visiting someone, if you know, I know this has happened to me personally when my husband actually, he went to the emergency room once. We thought he was having a stroke. He had had multiple oral surgeries and he ended up just having Bell's palsy, which I never thought I would thank God for Bell's palsy, but I did. But the first people that showed up were our worship pastor, our youth pastor. And it was great because they came in And they could look at the situation and say, okay, we need practical supports here. We need food. We need transportation. But looking at that from a sense of, okay, we need spiritual support. I can think to call the chaplain when you're not capable of thinking because you're in crisis mode. So I want to encourage our listeners to be bold in that. If you are in that situation, if you go to visit someone in the hospital, be bold in asking them, have you accessed chaplaincy services or what kind of spiritual support do you have? Can I call your pastor? Can I call your priest? Can I call someone to give you spiritual support? I really encourage our listeners to be bold in that and to ask because it can be something that can be really life-changing. Well, Eddie, I want to hear about some of your experiences. Can you share a few stories that would illustrate to us the importance of chaplaincy and what you've learned from that?
Yes. I thought I could tell you 100 stories.
I bet.
But I thought, just to categorize a couple, one of my most powerful encounters as a chaplain, I was called upon by staff and informed that we had a patient who had just been informed. She was a fairly young lady, and she had been informed that she had a devastating cancer. And that without treatment, her life expectancy was months. Mm. And on the other hand, if she went through a regimen, which was going to be a very, very horrible procedure and process, that she would probably only add 2 to 3 years of her life.
Wow.
And so I was called into that. And chaplains do not go in to give advice. That is not our calling. We go in to walk along with people, to listen to people, and try to help them to make good decisions. And we must have talked for about 30 minutes. And her struggle was, I really do not want to undergo this horrific treatment. But I have a 4-year-old daughter, and if I do not, I'm afraid that she will never remember me. Yeah. And she talked, and I listened and reflected a couple of times. And after about 30 minutes, I said to her, I said, I think I'm hearing that you know what you want to do. And she said, yes, I want my daughter to be able to remember me.
Oh, my goodness.
And I just left that room that day so fulfilled because I had not told her what she should do. But I had helped her to identify what she wanted to do, and she was willing to pay the price to have that happen. I had a couple of interesting incidents. One involving a marriage. I was called to the ICU one day and discovered that the groom during the wedding ceremony, before the wedding was done, had a heart attack.
Oh, my.
And the wedding did not get finished. And I was called to the room, and they asked, "Could there's any way that I could help them?" And I said, "Do you have a valid marriage license?" And they did. And so I performed a wedding ceremony there in the ICU room. And then I remember also I was approached by the daughter of an ICU patient who was scheduled to be married, but her mother was dying. And she asked me if there was any way that we could she could have her wedding in our chapel. And I said, I think we can do that. My boss was off at that time, so mm-hmm. I went ahead and okayed it. And I worked together with her two ICU nurses, and we arranged it for a couple of days later. And the ICU nurses, the mother was really terminally ill, but they were able to get her ready and bring her down in a stretcher, and we had her wedding. I did not do the wedding, mm-hmm. but we had her wedding in our chapel, and she so much wanted her mother to be there for her wedding and to do that.
But, you know, Eddie, I think it's really great because now you are on the board. You're a chairman of the board of directors for pastoral and chaplain services. Now, for those of you who are regular listeners to the show, you would have heard Mo and Sherry Mays, who have been guests on our show before. And Mo runs the pastoral and chaplains and chaplain services, otherwise called PCS services. And you may have listened to their story of losing their son to a boating accident. And now Mo, who was, of course, a firefighter and then worked on staff at a church, is now also in that chaplaincy service, and he provides services a lot to first responders. So can you talk a little bit about pastoral and chaplain services and what your role is in that and what y'all are doing?
Yes. Well, Mo and I actually, he shared with me several years ago that he felt a calling toward this. And we talked many times. I was one of about three or four people who were his prayer partners. And God really kind of pushed him to initiate that. And so that came together. He asked me to serve as president of the board. We are a nonprofit. And he is the chaplain. He is the boots on the ground. Mm-hmm. And he has done an incredible job in terms of providing support. He's called into so many nightmare moments of his life. But our group, PCS Ministries, is there to, first of all, provide chaplaincy support. But we're also training chaplains, not like I am, but training chaplains in terms of being chaplains for police, for firemen, and for other first responders. And I've just felt that's such an important opportunity and such a need for a chaplain that I've been so delighted to be a part of the board. I'm there, of course, I could provide actual chaplaincy services, but I'm actually just a part of the board.
Well, that's an important part because you're right. I see that as a gap and being able, and I've seen Mo in our community being called on to by, you know, when things happen, when really tragic things happen and those first responders see that. Again, Eddie, you know, you'll hear me say it again, but I have such a special burden for people like that who serve in that moment, because when you are in need of services like that and you are calling 911 or you're going to the emergency room, you're trusting that somebody is going to show up and help you, and they see the worst of the worst and they just carry it around as such a silent burden. And as I said before, it can be difficult to reach out for mental health services because then, you know, there's this perception of, oh, what, can you not take it? You know, you need to suck it up. Like, this is our job. This is what we do. And, you know, are you going soft on us and all these kinds of things? And so I just want to encourage all of the first responders out there, all of the healthcare professionals, all of those people who respond in emergency situations, law enforcement, forgive me for leaving anyone out because there's so many teachers and I can't even tell you what. Thank you for doing what you do. And Eddie, I'd just like to thank you for being a chaplain alongside those people and coming and giving them spiritual care and giving them hope that they need to have, because we are in desperate need of that. And in a world that can often seem hopeless and overwhelming, I think of, okay, this is the Gen X kid in me coming out, but Mr. Rogers, who would always say, look for the helpers. You can always find the helpers. And Eddie, you are a true helper. Thank you for being a helper. To our listeners, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face to shine upon you. Maybe he be gracious to you and give you peace. And we will see you tomorrow for the start of Share-a-thon. It's my first one. I cannot wait. So we'll see you there. We'll have Wesley Wildman on with us for the Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And you'll have a chance to exercise our healthy habit of the week, giving back. See you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.